Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Energy. Every year we find more uses for it, and yet our traditional fossil fuel supplies are drying up. In Britain, North Sea gas supplies are running out and coal-fired power stations are being closed sooner than expected. Meanwhile, alternative energy supplies are not yet ready to meet the demand. But the country is sitting on gas. The problem is, it's located in the deep shales, at least 2 kilometres underground, and it requires hydraulic fracking to get it out. The issue of whether to access the gas is dividing public opinion. I'm Gaia Vince, and in this edition of Discovery from the BBC, I'm going to find out what fracking involves, about some of the risks, and discover what we can learn from the pioneers of the technology, the United States, where it's become a highly contentious issue.
Steve Lipsky says a company drilled under his dream house, and now there's natural gas and toxic chemicals in the water.
We actually moved out of our house because we knew how dangerous it was, and then went and had the water tested.
Lipsky says the lab told him the water was so polluted he shouldn't use it.
Not for anything, and including even watering the yard, because it just, your grass will light on fire.
They brought in so much equipment. I mean, there was like 9 water trucks, and then they brought in a bunch of other trucks that I have no idea what the names of them are. And at that point, I went up to the sign and I called the gas company.
In areas where fracking and housing developments coexist, there's a patchwork of state laws when it comes to notifying residents about activity. A number of states require a company to issue some form of notification when it seeks to drill a well. In Colorado, as far as fracking goes, there's no requirement to notify nearby residents.
So what makes shale gas different from other kinds of gas we use today? It's all methane. But as Professor Mike Stevenson, Director of Science and Technology for the British Geological Survey, told me, it's found in different rocks.
It's not like gas in sandstone or limestone, which is what we call a conventional reservoir. So you've probably heard this word unconventional before. And the reason why shale is considered unconventional for hydrocarbons or for oil and gas is because it's very unlike what we're used to. And essentially, shale is very, very fine-grained. And if you take a chunk of it and look at it in your hand, you can't see any of the particles that it's made up of because they're too small. And the gas is trapped in between these tiny particles, and getting it out is really quite difficult.
So how on earth is it commercially worthwhile to get these tiny, tiny little bits of gas out of the shale?
Well, although the spaces are very small and there's a tiny little packet of gas in each of the spaces, there are millions and trillions of spaces. So although the shale looks kind of rather dull and barren, it's actually got a lot of gas in it. In fact, it's in some cases it has more gas in it than a conventional reservoir. So it's not a matter of it looking like, or because the particle spaces, the spaces between the particles are small, there isn't much gas. There's an awful lot of these spaces between the particles. There are millions and trillions of them, and that's really why the shale has a lot of gas in it. The British Geological Survey has recently done an assessment of shale gas in the north of England, and what we come up with is a very large figure of about 1,300 trillion cubic feet of shale gas. Now, that is a huge figure, but it's important to realise that that's what we call a resource figure, which is different from a reserve. So a resource figure is what you think, what we think is in the ground, and a reserve figure is what we could get out economically, or, you know, within environmental, within environmental safety limits, within essentially economic limits. So although we have a very large figure for resource in the northern part of England, we may only get out, you know, 2% of that, 1,300 trillion cubic feet. We may only get 2%, we may only get 3%. So at the moment, we don't know what the size of, you know, the business is, if you like. It could be very small.
So you need to get it out by fracturing. So what exactly does that mean?
So hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, which is its kind of nickname, is where you what you're trying to do is get the gas to be able to flow from in between these particles. Because as I said, the particles are very, very small. And if you were to drill a hole into shale, gas would come out, but not very much, because you'd only be getting the gas that the hole you've drilled has been able to access or open up these tiny spaces. In order to get more of the gas out, you have to cause cracks to form inside the shale, far away from where you've drilled the well. And the way they do it is by pumping water in at very, very high pressure, enormously high pressure. And what it does is it finds its way into natural cracks that are already there, and it opens them up. It's a little like pumping it up, opening the cracks up. And when you open these cracks up, then you're getting to more of the spaces between particles, if you see what I mean. And when you pump the water out, when you've finished your hydraulic fracturing, then the gas follows because it's trying to get out. And hydraulic fracturing is really just a way of getting at more of the shale.
In the UK, fracking has been done on an experimental basis. As yet, no decision has been made by the government on whether to allow commercial fracking for shale gas. But there are around 2,000 onshore wells where oil and gas has been drilled. I went to the north of England to visit one of these wells. Dr. Chris Bone of the company iGas showed me around. So Chris, what's happening on site here?
This is the Dough Green coal bed methane pilot production facility. We have four wells here and we have two on production. We're producing gas to a 1 megawatt power generator, and that power is being sent to the national grid.
So I can see four red wellheads, which are basically these kind of upright metal, about 10 foot high constructions with little wheels on the side. And apart from that, it's basically looks a bit like a car park. There's not much to see above ground.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit unexciting, I guess. But these are production wellheads. These are on after the well drilling has been finished, and they collect the gas. The little wheels are valves, really, for controlling the well. And yeah, it's a fairly unobtrusive site, and not a great deal to see other than the four wellheads. Most of the activity on site like this takes place during the drilling time. It would take typically somewhere between maybe 30 and 90 days to drill a well, depending on what you're actually doing. After that, what you get left is a production site, maybe some process plant, which we have behind me, which is generating power, and it's fairly low-key.
So this is quite an unusual site that you're drilling here for gas.
Yes, well, we're accessing the coal seams for the gas here. We drill a horizontal well in, and the gas produces naturally as the coal seam dewaters. We collect that gas at surface. It's really, the production is really down to the geology that you're at in the particular location. Here we are in coal. Elsewhere in the UK, you may produce oil or gas from what are classically known as conventional reservoirs, sandstones, clastics, limestones, carbonates. And I guess another type of play would be the shale gas play as well, which is a different type of geology.
So this site, you've just drilled down and the gas has come up just through the pressure. But in some sites, you have to do fracking, or in the past you have. How does that work?
The drilling process in any site is exactly the same, whether it is a coal bed methane facility, whether it is a shale gas or a conventional oil or gas facility. The drilling process is exactly the same. What is different is really the well completion. Hydraulic fracturing, as you referred to, is part of a well completion process, and that is required in shale gas wells to get it to flow to surface.
So the drilling process is exactly the same, and what's different is that in fracking, you'll be putting a high-pressure water system down.
That's correct. Hydraulic fracturing is basically where we pump high-pressure fluids down the well into the rock face, if you like, and we basically create hairline fractures in the rock using pressure, and then we hold open those very small hairline fractures with sand, and that allows us to access trapped hydrocarbons.
So what you would do to frack, if I understand it, is you would pump high pressure water down into the rock and a sort of slurry of sand as well to hold those fractures open so it doesn't close and the gas can flow out.
That's correct. You pump a frack fluid, which is, you know, 99.5% water and sand, about 0.1 to 0.5% some chemicals in there to help in the fracturing process. That would be under high pressure to break open the rock. We have to overcome what's called the rock fracture gradient to create the hairline fractures, and the sand that's in the fluid is then left behind in the rock to hold those fractures open. You need to create those fractures in the rock to allow trapped gas within the shale to be able to flow into the wellbore and then to surface.
So fracking isn't anything new. We've been doing it in the UK for some time. What is new is that we're, for the first time, thinking of fracking in shale rock.
That is correct. It is absolutely not a new process. It has been around for at least 60 years. Certainly within the UK, hydraulic fracturing has been taking place for about 30 years. Out of about 2,000 wells that have been drilled onshore UK, I think about 10% of them have been hydraulically fractured. So no, it's not a new process. I guess what is new is that it would be in the deeper shales, which is a relatively new process in the UK.
So this well is, how deep is it about?
These wells here, we're accessing coal seams around about 1,200 metres from surface.
And if it was shale gas, how much deeper would you have to go?
It really depends on the geographical location that you're at, but in this particular area, we may be looking at around about sort of 2,500 to 3,000 metres in depth.
Now, I understand you've got a site that you're actually looking at about 20 minutes from here.
That's correct. IGAS are looking to drill an exploration borehole at the Barton Moss site. That is only an exploration well when we will be looking at all the geological horizons on the way down, including coal bed methane, conventional rocks and the claystones and shales, and there is no plans at all to do any hydraulic fracturing there.
Another company carried out some experimental drilling in 2011 in Blackpool, not far from where I was, which caused earthquakes and led to local concerns.
An investigation into two earth tremors in Lancashire earlier this year has concluded that they were probably caused by a controversial gas extraction technique known as fracking. The study was commissioned by Quadrilla, the company that's been drilling for shale gas off the coast at Fylde. A group of protesters opposed to fracking have climbed onto one of the firm's rigs today.
Quadrilla Resources believes there are huge reserves of gas in layers of shale under Lancashire. That's based on test drilling it's carried out. But getting at the gas will involve a process called fracking. A mixture of sand and water-containing chemicals is pumped underground at high pressure to fracture the rock. Quadrilla had to suspend fracking at its test site earlier this year following two earth tremors. A report has found it was highly probable that hydraulic fracturing did set off those tremors, but it also found it was due to an unusual combination of factors unlikely to reoccur at future sites. The study was commissioned by Quadrilla itself, but it says the work was carried out by independent scientists. But some environmental groups want a moratorium on shale gas, objecting not just to the fracking process, but also to the extraction of more fossil fuels instead of alternative energy sources. Today, a small group of activists scaled a Quadrilla test rig near Southport. One of their supporters on the ground was Mark Lloyd.
We want this industry to stop. Local people here are dead against it, and we're here in solidarity with them to put an end to fracking in the UK.
Earthquakes have also happened in the US near shale gas sites. Are they a reason to be cautious about fracking? Professor Zoe Shipton of Strathclyde University in Scotland is a geologist who sat on a key scientific advisory committee looking into fracking hazards.
Causing tiny, tiny earth tremors is an inherent part of hydraulic fracturing. So when you pump the fluid in and you fracture the rock, those fractures release the stored energy in the rock. So it's a bit like when you break a stick and you hear a snap. That snap is this equivalent, it's the seismic energy being radiated out of a breaking stick. So each individual fracture that's caused at depth will release about the same amount of energy as dropping a box of orange juice from waist height. But that's happening at, 2, 3, 5 kilometres depth. So that energy is never going to reach the surface and be felt as an earthquake at the surface. But in fact, it's incredibly useful because the operators can put instruments down boreholes and listen out for little pops and cracks as those fractures propagate, so they can see where they're going. And it's one of the reasons why we're very confident that those fractures are staying within the producing horizons and not sort of disappearing off upwards. So what happened with the earthquakes in Lancashire was a different process. So what probably happened there was that the changes in stress that were induced in the rock by pumping in the fluids actually applied stress to a fault that was already there and that was ready to fail anyway, and it just took it slightly closer to failure than it was before, and it caused a small slip. And it was a small slip. The magnitude was a 2.3 was the maximum of the magnitudes that was felt at Lancashire. And to put that into context, the British Geological Survey national network of seismometers can only really feel earthquakes bigger than a magnitude 2 or 2.5 in urban areas, because the vibrations from buses and lorries and construction sites is about that order of magnitude. So you would feel an earthquake of magnitude 2.3 if you were in a quiet room at night in a rural area. but it's not really going to be something you'd notice in a city. There are bigger earthquakes in the US which are associated with extraction of shale gas, but they're not related to hydraulic fracturing. They're related to pumping waste fluid down underground. So you can drill a disposal well and dispose of your waste fluid down that well. Now, what that does is it's pumping, it's not hitting the rock with such high, you know, short, sharp pressures, but it is slowly but surely putting a lot of water into a large volume of rock. And that's just much more likely to intersect one of these faults that's sort of primed to slip, if you like.
Fracking uses a considerable amount of water, which needs to be disposed of safely. Professor Richard Davis, head of the Energy Institute at Durham University.
Well, around 2 to 16 Olympic swimming pools of water are used in the fracking operation, and between 10 and 50% of that water comes back. So you're left with perhaps 8 Olympic swimming pools maximum of water that needs to be cleaned. Depending on where you are in the world, the plan for disposal of water is different. If you're in Texas, the water is often reinjected underground, and that has associated problems, so it actually induces earthquakes by doing that eventually. In Pennsylvania, they can't inject wastewater, so sometimes it's moved out of the state to another state where they can, because the geology is right, or they clean it. In the UK, we're not allowed to inject wastewater underground unless you're pumping it into an old oil field, and therefore the water would have to be cleaned, and that's what happened in Lancashire in 2011. The water was cleaned.
What has also worried those living close to fracking sites is contamination of their drinking water. There have been highly publicised reports of people setting fire to what comes out of their taps. What do the scientists say about this? Professor Richard Davis again.
I think some of the things that have happened is that there was a film called Gaslands where someone was filmed lighting gas coming out of a tap in a kitchen. Now, that's a very controversial and evocative image. The gas probably had nothing to do with fracking. It could well have been biogenic gas, which is absolutely natural. But those sorts of images, I think, stick in people's heads and make, you know, fracking an issue for everyone.
Mike Stevenson has been following these cases of contamination in the US.
There have been problems in the United States. One example, which was published in a scientific paper, I think in June, showed that shale gas methane in water wells, and it was higher in water wells close by to shale gas wells. And they showed that. And they showed that in that area of Pennsylvania, there had been many tens, 100 violations of the quality of the finishing of the boreholes. So 1 year there'd been 100 violations, the next year also something like that number. So there's clearly a problem with doing or constructing the wells properly. And that was what the authors of the paper attributed this methane that had got into water wells to. Essentially, the company's not doing their job properly in that area.
So if all the rules are followed, the risk to our aquifers, to our drinking water, is actually very low.
Yeah, the place where the gas is closest to the aquifer, to the water-bearing layer, is when the well passes through it. When you're fracking, you're kilometres below the water-bearing layers, thousands of metres below, with lots of rock in between. The main problem is where the well passes through that layer of where the water is. And the most important thing is to seal the well off properly so that it doesn't leak. And if you do that properly, the risk should be very low.
These issues of contamination and earth tremors and the disruption caused by building wells have polarised communities. Some people believe the economic advantages of fracking outweigh the environmental impacts. Others are strongly opposed. On top of these problems, scientists are also concerned that some of the methane is leaking from the wells during extraction. Methane is a 70 times more potent greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide over a 20-year timescale. The American Environmental Defense Fund is currently working with the University of Texas to discover if fracking is contributing more to climate change than other fuel extractions. They've gained access to wells run by a number of exploration companies and measured how much of the gas is leaking. Ramon Alvarez, senior scientist at the environmental think tank.
Well, at this point, there aren't any guidelines for methane emissions. The benchmark that you might use to compare, which were presented in a paper that we published last year, were that compared to coal, again, you have to compare the natural gas used to something else. Compared to coal, if you want natural gas to be better for the climate, the overall loss of methane all the way from the well through to the power plant needs to be less than 3%. So that's one benchmark. Another benchmark is if you're using natural gas for transportation instead of diesel, that level has to be 1% of the gas leaked or less. So this study gives us a comparison point, but it's only part of the picture, right? Because we only looked at the production of natural gas. You still have to consider the processing and the transmission pipelines and the local pipelines that take it to your home or business. So it's only part of the story, but for this part of it, it suggests that if all the other emissions come in line with the current estimates, natural gas would be better than coal, but it still would be worse for the climate than diesel for a period of time. So let's break down the study. There were three major areas that they presented. Number one was the well completion process, where you clear out the well after hydraulic fracturing of fluids and sand. And during that process, what they found was that where the emissions were much lower than could be because of the use of capture technology or flaring of the gas so that it's not released as methane. Instead, it's burned into CO2. So those when that technology was used, emissions were 99% lower than they otherwise would have been. So it's a very effective technology when used. And fortunately, in the United States, all wells starting in 2015 are going to have to use that practice. On the other hand, when you look at the emissions from valve controllers that use natural gas to operate them, those were higher than what the current estimates are, as were the emissions from leaks of valves, connectors, compressors, some of the regular equipment and infrastructure that's on the production sites. And in both of those cases, there are distributions, and it points to the need for better leak detection and repair programs in order to identify and fix those leaks quickly.
If these measures took place and the leaking was reduced, the emissions from the valves were reduced, and the flaring, the burning of the methane to produce carbon dioxide, which is a less potent greenhouse gas than methane, if all these measures took place, would fracking production actually produce lower greenhouse gas emissions than comparable diesel or coal gas from conventional sources?
Well, it's hard to say, again, because we've only so far completed the study on production. So we still have to see how high the emissions are from the other parts of the supply chain after production. But I think what we can say is that for production alone, based on what this study observed, there appears to be an opportunity for emissions to be further reduced. So instead of 0.4%, perhaps that could be brought down by some amount. It's hard to say exactly how much, but perhaps it could be 0.3, it could be 0.2. We don't know for sure. The study was simply trying to assess where we are today. And then the question is, all right, well, at the end of the day, are you talking about natural gas being better or worse for climate than other fuels? For that question, we still have to wait for the results of other studies and to see whether overall we're less than that 1% benchmark for diesel or that 3% benchmark for coal.
I mean, if it's better for the environment than other fuels, does that mean that it's taking the place of other fuels in the energy mix, or is it simply supplementing it?
Well, that's a policy decision that governments have to make, governments and utility companies. But I think you see in the marketplace today that there are market forces that are pushing for natural gas use. In the United States, it's displacing coal simply on economic grounds because of the low cost of natural gas. So you're seeing increased use of natural gas for power plants and lesser use of coal for power plants, absent any type of environmental driver. So that's just sort of a market force that you see in effect. And the question is now, if we want to also put climate as criterion for deciding what kinds of fuels we should use, then, you know, people will have to make a decision based on what the overall effect on climate, considering the methane and the carbon dioxide, is.
The British public have still to decide whether to go ahead and frack the potentially enormous reserves of natural gas that lie in the shales deep beneath them. Many of the problems the US has experienced with fracking, which have proved so divisive there, can be avoided by applying existing well management and regulatory procedures. But the biggest environmental issue concerns the gas itself. Methane, whether it's fracked or not, is a greenhouse gas. And when it's burnt in power stations, it releases carbon dioxide, both of which are warming the planet. If we want to preserve a livable climate, we need to meet our energy needs without releasing the Earth's locked away carbon.
One of the things that I think is often overlooked in the debate about the environmental impacts of hydraulic fracturing in the UK is the issue about the amount of extra hydrocarbons that it's potentially going to add to the energy that we have available to use. And the US Energy Information Administration has estimated a global technically recoverable resources of shale gas and shale and tight oil could add 47% to our proved and unproven technically recoverable natural gas resources. And if we burn all of that natural gas, that represents a significant amount of extra CO2 in the atmosphere. So I think as part of the debate, we ought to be seriously debating how we use that gas responsibly in an energy mix. Now, gas is a cleaner fuel than coal, but it will add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.